Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Flat Classroom Book Club meeting. I am Ben Curran of Engaging Educators, and I'm here today with my colleague Neil Weatherby, who will say hi in a minute, and we're ready to wrap up our biggest online book club I've ever been a part of, our ninth meeting, chapters 12 through 10 we're going to get through today. Look forward to having a great discussion. And I think the three big topics are pretty awesome, and it's hard to believe we're wrapping up this book club. Vicki invited us to do this all the way back in the summer of last year, and it's just been a great ride for us ever since. Neil, did you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm happy to be here. Excited to talk about chapters 10 through 12. I know that Ben and I are sitting down tomorrow to talk with our administration about how to implement some changes in our curriculum, and I think that these three chapters really are a good starting point for our conversations tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to hearing everybody's great ideas. Back to you, Ben.
Oh my gosh, you're right. This couldn't be better timed for us. I mean, I've got a lot of questions of my own to ask, and love to hear from some of you guys as we sort of talk about these topics here tonight. I also wanted to give the authors a chance to say hi. I know both Vicki and Julie are here for the culminating meeting, and we've got lots of folks ready to share today, but I wanted to turn it over to Vicki and Julie, maybe for their welcome or opening thoughts here as we discuss sort of three big ideas. One being designing and managing projects, which you could probably do several hours on just on that. Another one on the another sort of big topic from chapter 11, which is really appealing to me and where I am in my current work and thoughts, is the idea of challenge-based professional development. And then our big wrap-up chapter 12, which I just love the way the book ended there, with rock the world. So Vicki or Julie, I'm going to pass it to you, and go ahead and say hi to the folks here.
And thanks, Ben. Thanks, Neil. It's Julie Lindsay here from Beijing, China. It's a grey Monday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. And great to be here. And this has been just a wonderful series. Thanks so much for hosting this for us. I'm going to have to duck out in about half an hour just to let you know, so I will just disappear. I've got to get on the road and get to school. But these three chapters in particular are very dear to our heart, as is the whole book. But these three, you know, we floated over chapter 10 because it's just, you know, it's the essence of being a good project manager. You know, it's all very well to have the ideas of the project and say, yes, let's join our classrooms together, isn't this great, isn't this fun? But unless you actually know how to manage, unless you actually have the skills and the strategies and the resources for managing the project is not necessarily as successful as it could be. And of course, Vicki and I have worked on two main things, sustainability and scalability with our projects. And this is something we've tried to share through this particular chapter. And then, of course, chapter 11 is this whole challenge-based professional development, and this relates back to the workshops and conferences that we run, and we've tried to also make it applicable to what you can do in your immediate school environment. So, it's just so important to change the mindset of professional development, to have it more active, to have hands-on, not just a passive sort of approach to learning. Vicki, over to you.
Julie hit chapter 10 really well, and chapter 11, which is on challenge-based professional development, is really, you know, we kind of did the projects, and then we're like, well, how do we take it to the next step? How do we help people really, really understand what we're trying to do? Because we can't lecture, we can't get up there, and actually, the Flat Classroom conferences, we've got one coming up in Düsseldorf, Germany, December 6th through the 8th, and then Julie, I don't have my calendar going out to March, but I don't know if you want to pull those dates from flatclassroomconference.com, but in March, we'll be in Japan, and in these conferences, we bring together about 250 people, about half students, half teachers, and it's March 8th through 10th, and really trying to envision the future of education. So it's challenge-based and people in bit projects, and we talk about things. And in fact, that's how the Eracism Project was born. And it's just so exciting to see the transformation that happens. But, you know, something really interesting happened in Beijing. A little bit into it, there were some teachers who wanted to leave, and they wanted to come and go. And they said, well, if we do a project, we can't just leave and come back. We're going to miss something. And they saw that as a bad thing. That was the only criticism we really got. Was, well, if we're not here the whole time, we're going to miss something. And it's like, you know what, professional development, you should miss something if you're not there. You should be doing something. It's just like class. You know, if a student ever comes up to me and says, am I going to miss anything? You know, that just sends me into orbit. Because of course you're going to miss something. And so it should be the same with our professional development. You should be engaged the entire time that you have a professional development experience. It should be challenge-based. It should be project-based. You should be creating something. You should be engaged in learning. And yes, it should be a team, and you should be not just in your group of cronies who are going to do group think and agree with you. You should be pushed outside your comfort zone. And even the including of people who aren't there by flattening the conference, including virtual participants, this is really a challenge for a lot of conferences. We're talking about what we're going to be doing at ISTE, and trying to get that worked out. And you know, they said, well, we're going to have a back channel for the virtual and face-to-face. And I met with them this week and said, no, we don't want it to be virtual and face-to-face. It needs to be the same. It needs to be flattened. It needs to be merged together. So, and then the last chapter was really a lot of fun to write. And you know, there are very few times that I literally cry when I write something, but that chapter, I literally cried on the keyboard in a good way because I was personally so moved by what we really want to see people do. So, and then there's a little bit of humor in there too, but because we do want to rock the world. So if you get discouraged and get overwhelmed, you can always flip to chapter 12 and then come back because to me, the chapter on choice and then chapter 12 are two of my personal favorites that I drafted, and that Julie and I all drafted so much of the book. And chapter 10 is an incredible chapter. Julie just did an amazing job with that chapter. So anyway, that's kind of my little bit of a ramble, but I think I've got Germany and Japan on my mind right now, thinking about seeing Julie and getting those things together.
Okay, well, I'm going to thank you for that. I'm going to pass it over to Neil as we move into open discussion of Chapter 10 and our Design Imagining a Global Project. Take it away, Neil.
I think for me, Chapter 10 was sort of the chapter that finally wrapped sort of the final ball around the whole book. Where everything I've read so far made sense. It was exciting. It was interesting. I saw the value in it. It's something I wanted to try or have tried in my class. But I think our school right now is so focused on this transition to Common Core that I kept saying, what about the standards? Where are the standards really going to be? hit with this. And this chapter really talks about, you know, how to tie the project to whatever the individual classroom's needs are. And I'm still not quite sure how to do that completely. So I'm wondering if people have done that, Vicki or anybody else, could share some insight on how you can really have a collaborative project where you're meeting standards for different states, different countries, those sorts of things. Any thoughts on that?
I'm looking for right now for Susie Nestico's classroom blog. She actually shares the Common Core standards with each day and what they're doing. And I'm looking for her blog right now to try to share that with you. But, you know, the thing is you have to customize it for your actual classroom. So there's so many different ways to integrate depending upon which kind of teacher you are. But let me find that link for you and let's see what the other folks say.
Yeah, maybe, Neil, can you reframe that question there for us one more time so everybody's got it and knows exactly what the question is. It's really something I think is important, especially in the standards-based environments that we work in. If you could just, well, at least for me, it would help me to hear. Maybe not everybody else, but it would help me to hear a rephrase of that or a restatement of that one more time, please.
Since I'm better, my mic got turned way down somehow between testing it and actually using it, looks like. I'm about to turn it back up. So my question is, if you're managing these global projects, or even projects not with the outside of your own state, everybody has their own set of standards, and how do you cope with a project where I can teach my lessons that help address my standards, but also with somebody in, say, Japan who has a different set of standards. In the book, you're talking about how, you know, if it was like a speech class, you could have synchronous debates. If it was a writing class, you could write a blog, a blog post. But I'm still struggling to see how you come up with a coherent project where you have different schools all doing different sort of methods of composition. So what are people's experiences with that?
Well, the experiences that we've had, there's one general goal. There's a goal that we do as a group, and then each teacher has his or her classroom goals, and it really seems to work in really well. We come up with a joint presentation and communication style, but to look at the standards and the Common Core standards are really is what every country wants, some deep skill practice, some deep understanding, some real collaboration, and these projects just work perfect for that. And then we can each take that back to our own classrooms and then work on specific areas in our own classrooms. So I think it works really well all the way around for all that.
Oh, hi, it's Julie here. Let me just jump in here. I'm hoping you just put your hand up. I think the ISTE standards in particular are just so transferable across different educational systems and different countries and different cultures. Because in many respects they are quite broad, and I know that I often see people criticizing them because of their broadness, but I really think the way that Vicki and I have actually included the standards through the chapters and given people a handle on what the essential standards are as we go through, for example, the designing and managing a global collaborative project, chapter 10. I think these can be built into what you do, as Donna says. You sort of take it and bring it back to what you need in your own curriculum. I think that's really important, that it's accessible to everybody by doing this. Over to you.
Okay, I'm gonna just go here. And Donna, I've totally forgotten what grade you teach. But I wanted to ask you a specific question. Yes, that's what I thought. So Donna, or maybe anybody else can answer. So Donna, you did Week in the Life, right? Some semblance of that, right? And so my question is, so you've got a Week in the Life framework, and you've got the Week in the Life project. And maybe Lisa or Vicki or somebody could throw the link into the chat if folks aren't familiar with that great project. But so that project is pretty cut and dry in a way. I mean, I know the teachers make it their own, but how do you make that fit with your standards? Or when it was created, was it linked to the standards and that sort of thing? And I guess my question, if I could just ramble on here just a second, I guess my question applies to the flat classroom project too, and all the other projects really is. So if somebody wants to sign up to do the flat classroom project, and that has this goal and that goal and that goal, Are those all rooted in standards, so that somebody could say to their boss, you know, here's the standards that this is rooted in, or are you just sort of hoping that it fits? And I'll just sort of let Donna maybe answer about Week in the Life or anybody else.
Well, that's a perfect example, because a Week in the Life is a broad overall cultural goal, as well as writing and presenting and collaborating. And in fifth grade in our district, we study cultural universals. And so it's perfect for that. So I take that, and instead of using the textbook, I teach cultural universals through our project, and then go into it deeper and bring that back into the ancient culture. So it's a much broader thing than most schools probably use a Week in the Life for. But then we have technology goals and collaboration goals and a lot of writing. They each write papers. There's a lot more that we do in our classroom that's above and beyond what we do as a collaborative global group. And I believe most schools do that. They do the project, and then they take that and they go back to their own classrooms and kind of branch out where their standards lie.
So Donna said it really well. I'm also in the Week in the Life for the second time, same as Donna. But I think every teacher that joins one of these projects has to recognize that their standards or directives from their school are going to be different. And I think the projects are broad enough so that you can use what comes across as sort of the backbone of a flat classroom project. But then I think it's up to everybody to adapt it to what they're doing. And I think Michael said it well, that his standards are going to be different from those in the United States, and I'm in a school that doesn't have to follow Common Core standards, but I'm still deciding how I'm going to bring in all my skill work around a Week in the Life, but I may have overall goals that are slightly different from Donna's, and I think that's important. Here's what I'll say is I like the flexibility that teachers can have within a Week in the Life, although I do think that the first time you do a flat classroom project, it's really very overwhelming, and you might not get to the point of really being able to figure it out how it's going to really fit into your curriculum until you do it a second time, because then you've worked out all the bugs and you're more familiar with it.
know, we talk about being a teacherpreneur, and this is where you really have to be that. It's very important to know the standards. You should be expert on the standards that you have to meet in your course. And as you look at projects, you can find other teachers who are already meeting those standards. So, for example, Susie Nestico is a history teacher, and she's using Black Classroom and aligning with Common Core standards, and that's what she has. I have different standards and objectives I meet here. We don't use Common Core at my school, so we have all have different standards and objectives, and of course you can share that with other teachers in the project. But to remember, we're really talking about global collaboration in, with a lot of our projects here. There's certainly a need, I think, to create global collaborative projects around some Common Core standards that might be projects that would be U.S.-based or within a state or within a district or within a region. So the goal is not to say Black Classroom is one size fits all. The goal is to say, okay, so this is some example projects that have been done. Here's how you come up with this framework. And when you create a project, use this framework so that you can communicate the standards very clearly. So if something's created for Common Core, you should very clearly define that this is created for Common Core so that other people can find you. Because global collaborative projects are still so in their infancy, but I would say one of the top problems is communicating effectively what that project will do and what the expectations are. Because what happens if the people sign up for projects and the project starts morphing as they're in it, and people get so excited and they add this and they add that and they add this and they add that, and you have to kind of have it clear so that you know what you're getting out of that project. And standards are part of it, you know, but it's kind of, you have to be careful. You could let a project be based around standards and created by standards, but sometimes, you know, it's more than just like history standards. You would probably have ISTNet tie in with, because these tie in so well.
I feel like all those answers answered about 95% of what I was still wondering about. I think that makes a lot more sense to me now, especially about taking stuff back into your class and building out from there with your own specific needs. The one thing I still haven't heard of wrapping my head around was the idea of the project in the book where you talked about how one school could be working on writing blog posts, and one school could be working on creating videos. How do you work on getting the collaboration, the global collaboration with that, rather than having distinct schools working on sort of distinct projects all around the same theme?
Now, the important thing to remember is that you have required and optional outcomes, and you want to just have one or two required outcomes. So, Black Classroom, the required outcomes are the wiki and the video. You should not sign up if you don't want to do that. A wiki and the life, they're using VoiceThread. They have certain things that they agree that they will do. And if the required outcomes of a project do not fit with your standards, you should not join that project, because it's not going to be a good fit for you and you're going to disappoint your partners. The way that you can adapt is that, say, you all agree to those required outcomes, is that you have optional outcomes like blogging or other things that you can create as well. And that is part of the framework. So if you look at Chapter 10, you have required outcomes and optional outcomes, and you have to make sure you can agree to the required, and the optional outcomes are other things that you can do as your standards dictate. And you can even add other optional outcomes and say, okay, I've got to do this and this. Anybody else want to do this with me? And those are perfectly fine. But you cannot deviate from your required outcomes, or else you don't have a glue to hold the project together.
I do think, Neil, hit the nail on the head. I think the biggest challenge of being part of a classroom project is getting to the level of collaboration. We struggle with it all the time in waking life, and part of it is complicated by the fact that many schools seem to start out in the project and then they aren't following through. In our case, getting photographs and comments up in the voice thread so the rest of your team can really discuss the essential questions of similarity and differences. But I still think even that way, that's probably the place where they start collaborating a little, but that's still the challenge for me, trying to figure out with the kids lower than middle school how we can really get them to truly collaborate. We connect, we communicate, but we're still trying to figure out how to really collaborate.
I think I'm just going to go and hop in here, but I think one of the things that I'm maybe totally off base here, and maybe I don't feel is this is sort of how Neil thinks too, or Vicky or what, but I think the depth of some of these projects and the driving questions behind them, in particular, you know, flat classroom and digiteen and those ones where you're working with older students, I think the depth of those it lends itself to fitting many standards. And if you unpack it per se, you'll find tons of state standards or national standards or wherever you're living, they're all going to be within there. And so there's no way that you could participate in this project and not be meeting any standards whatsoever. And I think that's part of a beautiful thing about global projects is that, yes, I think you should start with standards, but when they're good and when you've got good people behind them, you're going to be meeting the standards no matter what.
I think this idea of having agreed upon standards and then sort of branch out to optional standards, or optional outcomes, I should say, is even true within a collaboration within a school. I know that tomorrow Ben and I are sitting up to talk about how to implement more project-based learning into our curriculum and what it should look like across the whole school. And something like this where we have agreed upon we have to do X, Y, and Z, but you can choose to do, you know, A, B, and C. I think really really the beneficial model for globally, but also within the same building. Where have you been for the chapter 11?
Yeah, we did have three big chapters put together here, and I will say that one of the ones that intrigued me. I always say this every chapter I read is my new favorite chapter, but this chapter 11 really struck me too because it operates on so many levels, and it makes me excited about getting involved in this type of learning with others, not wanting to be, you know, there to help make this kind of learning happen. A couple things jumped out to me. One is this idea that PD needs to be completely rethought, and this is why Neil and I do what we do, is because we think professional development, if not broken, it's in need of a major overhaul, and we want to be on the forefront of helping that, you know, happen. And the other thing that jumped out to me is something that's new to me is this idea of the students being involved and partnering with students and the power that that has. And I sat in on the summit last week just for a couple minutes. I was having trouble getting in. But to sit in on a student summit and hear some of the students talking about their learning, and it just struck me as something a teacher should be able to do more of is to just listen to students talk about learning. So I guess I have two questions, and I'll start with the sort of the last one I was talking about is what are folks' experiences with bringing students into these sort of just professional development situations? In the book, it makes reference to, you know, sort of, I don't know how to phrase this the right way, but sort of trotting out the kids to sort of, you know, I can't remember how Vicky phrased it, or, but bringing the kids in is sort of like not a sideshow, but in a way, sort of like a smoke and mirrors or bells and whistles or something, you know, standing next to the poster at ISTE or whatnot. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but have you been involved in these sort of situations? What's it like when the kids are there in the conversation? Can people talk to us about any experiences they've had there?
Definitely, yes. When we run, I'm going to talk specifically about that classroom conference and the student summit that we run as part of it. And I think we're pretty much the only group that runs such an effective student-centered part of the conference. And what we do is we run the student strand and the leadership strand, and the two intertwine. And it's really it's giving the students a voice. It's empowering students to actually be part of the challenge-based process that we've designed. And it's extremely powerful. And students, most of them step up to the mark. Some of them struggle. We always bring in the virtual audience as well, which is another layer. And it gives students an opportunity to work with people they've never seen before, and they've met them online virtually, but they've never actually worked with them. We put them into mixed teams. They need to brainstorm, they need to come up with ideas, they need to work through their ideas. They pitch their ideas to the leadership strand and the rotation process. They get feedback, they refine their ideas, they pitch their ideas again. And then they work through and finalise their ideas and share a finished sort of platform product pitch for us. But, it's just an amazing, amazing process to see. You know, on the first day when everyone's really nervous and doesn't know anyone, by the end of the 3 days, they're all best friends and they've achieved such wonderful things. So it's certainly, from my point of view, a really important part of what we do in terms of professional development in a live event. Thanks.
You know, there's so many times at ISTE that I want to stand up and say, that's not going to work. You know, ask a student. And, you know, I think it just makes it more real when you have students there. And, you know, the students are trying to invent projects that would connect students together, and it's incredible the projects they create. In fact, some of the things are starting to happen that the students have invented. You know, we want to peer help each other with homework, and we want to tutor each other, and all of these different ideas that they come up with are incredible. But then when the teachers create their idea and they have to pitch it to the students, it really makes the teachers nervous, and they're shocked because, you know, a lot of them say, you know what, I've used students differently now because they have so much to add, and look at how engaged they are, and they're not running away playing in the hall. They're, you know, barely even taking a bathroom break. They're so excited about this stuff. So, you know, I think we always say once you go flat, you never go back. But when you truly flatten an event like this, you know, the goal is to let educators come away and truly understand what does it mean to make choices and differentiate and project-based learning and flattening the classroom. What does that look like, and to experience it? And when you have students there doing it, then they are getting real, authentic learning experiences, both from the students end and from the teachers end. It's very, very powerful when you see it happen in adults as well.
I've never been able to be part of one of the conferences because obviously they're on the other side of the world. But I think what Julie said about students have a voice and it empowers them, I've discovered over the years how important it is for students to realize that adults will take them seriously. So it's not bringing them in front of a group to put on a dog and pony show, but it's really getting them to recognize that the adults in the group, the adults in the audience, really recognize the work that they put into it, and they take it seriously. And I think that's tremendously powerful. I know in my own situation, I'm a very experienced teacher who never knew anything about technology until I really ran across a black classroom. I mean, I could use basics, but not all the web2o tools. And frankly, if it wasn't for my students working with me, I would not be able to take any of the kids into the depth that we're able to go in. Right now, we're putting together a publisher booklet for our K-2 pilot program where almost all of our teachers have submitted a page. And I'm having two of my fifth graders actually taking all the submissions, and they're the ones that actually are designing the book. They've already put together a screencast for teachers in that group to use who didn't know how to use you, I'm sure, before, and they are tremendously proud and so empowered by being one asked to do that and actually be so good at doing it that they're much better than I am. That's very powerful.
I think a lot of adults, especially ones who are in charge, tend to forget that and education isn't something that's done to children, and the children are the primary aspect of it, the central piece, and they're the most important piece. The politicians and the administrators and the teachers are really pretty much useless if it's not directed, their efforts aren't directed towards helping the students learn and having the students be the central focus. And I think that by including kids in something like this, it really brings them back in as sort of one of the stakeholders in their education, which is the whole goal. It seems pretty silly that we spend so much time with teachers sitting around and administrators sitting around and politicians sitting around talking about how to educate children, but very rarely having the children speak their mind as well. I know that Ben and I went to EduCamp Detroit last year, and I think that we've been to ISTE a few times, we've been to a few other large conferences, and I think that our time at that camp was probably more powerful than anything else we've done. I think it would have been really cool if they would have invited students to come and help facilitate some of the rooms and be part of the conversation as well.
Yeah, man. Just found out that last year that we didn't make it to this year's at Camp Neil or I in Detroit, but they did actually make probably Zono had a student panel there this year. Kelsey, you're right on the mark there with that one, and it sounded like it went really well as they shared their thoughts about the project. Here's a question I have for folks, and then I have one more about professional development. But, you know, when we talk about getting the students involved, it seems to be in more of a conference sort of situation where students are presenting or they're on panels and things like that. Is anybody able to foresee a way where, you know, districts have, you know, their professional development days, or schools have their professional development days where their teachers are in meetings all day? Does anybody have a way or be able to think of a way that kids could get involved in that, sort of what Neil's talking about, getting kids involved in those conversations instead of just sort of conference type formats? I'm curious to know if anybody has any ideas on that.
This is already happening, and I need to find a link. It's been some time ago that mentioned it, but there are schools that are using their students to teach the teachers about technology, and the students are actually training and teaching the teachers how to use the technology, different types for their classrooms. I think one place called the Tech Angels. I mean, there's other places. There's also conferences that are just students, but I've heard of some, and I need to find it. It's been some time ago that it was on my blog, but I'll have to see if I can dig that out of my bookmarks.
Shall we move on to chapter 12 then? I think we're running a little long time if we don't move on. There we go. All right, so open discussion, rock the world. Nobody can go back and start a new beginning, but anyone can start today and make a new ending. So I guess, what are your thoughts on chapter 12? Anything you want to add, Ben?
Well, let me just say, I think it comes down to, one, the feeling of empowerment you feel after reading a book that sort of, take care, Julian, I will be seeing you next month. Take care. Thank you so much for everything. I wanted to, you know, just the feeling of empowerment you get when you sort of think about it, teaching students in sort of a whole new way. And also this idea of setting, you know, learning goals. I'm curious what folks, and there's a chance we want everybody to talk and share, but what folks have on their plate. I mean, this chapter really lays down the gauntlet here in terms of what are you going to learn to rock the world? What are your three going to be? Now you're 10, now you're 20, not even your 5. What are your three things that you're going to be? And I remember actually sitting in an ISTE session in Denver listening to Vicki and Julie present on flattening the classroom, and probably where a lot of the ideas for the book started. I was in that room, and I had my three, and one of them was connect globally and make that sort of thing happen, and having such a small list made it so much easier. It was totally awesome. But what are people's goals? I want to know if you have three. Share them with us.
Well, I'll share my big three, but you're hearing from me a little too much today. Now, I really want to understand iPads in the classroom or tablets in the classroom, but not just this cutesy using apps. I think there's a real problem with learning analytics and actually giving feedback to the teachers based upon what the students are doing in the app. So that's one of my big three right now that I'm really trying to understand and grapple with, is how do you really get the learning analytics out of an iPad to allow you to personalize learning and get feedback to parents and teachers. And this kind of came about when my son was playing Stack the States and learning the states, and I couldn't get it to tell me which states was he having a problem on so that I could help him make sure he knew all 50 states. And it's like, you know, I should be able to get this data out of there. I know it's in there somewhere. So, I mean, that's just an example of a big three of really trying to understand that sort of thing. And it could be a technology, or it could be something like Kieran has shared. And maybe she wants to go on mic. I can share the others, but I'd like to hear some other folks talk about what are the next three things you want to do.
I think one of my big things is Ben loves to use the phrase best practice, and I really want to work on figuring out for my group of students what really is, yeah, you do. It's like your favorite go-to phrase. What really is best practice for my group of students at this point? This group of students this year, with these standards, what's going to work best for them, and then try to take that to my administration and to my colleagues and really figure out what truly is effective and not just what I think is effective.
Michael, let's hear yours. Go ahead before I respond to that. Favorite phrase comment.
And thanks, Ben. For me, right now, where I am and where I'm planning to head over the next year or so, I suppose, the three things for me is the first one is to find ways to better engage teachers in global collaboration. The second one would be to find ways to connect with people from non-English speaking and also backgrounds and people who just struggle with the whole concept. And three would be to do it without losing my mind and my sleep.
Who needs sleep? Come on, you're up at 6 a.m. every other week to talk to us. Yeah, me too. But, Michael, I think that you've hit at the core of what you want your big three to be, so specific and so obtainable. You haven't said anything that's completely out of reach. You said something that's very specific, and you have really made your goals meaningful, too. And I think that's true about Neil's as well. And my own thoughts on the big three, I had a couple. One is that I've been doing this about three, I think since I started going to ISTE and getting so inspired, you know, we were there first in 2010, and when I first started doing this, I was setting short goals, but I've hit them almost every time, at least in some form. You know, I walked out of that conference room in Denver and said, I'm going to connect with some classes. And we connected with schools in Georgia and all over the states, but also with Turkey and Russia and Taiwan as well. So you set those goals, and they end up happening. And it's amazing. I'm going to throw back to Michael. I want to hear some more. Thanks.
As I was just mentioning there, we've come a long way. Those goals are something that I'll probably work towards over a couple of years because, they were goals that I set out with at the start of the year. We've made progress. We've learned from our mistakes. And we've done some amazing work, but we do have a long way to go. But we'll be sticking it out for the long term.
I want to add on to Ben's comment a second ago about coming away from Denver with his big three. I think one thing is really important also is actually verbalizing, you know, to people who are important or who you work with, important to you. But those are kind of, Ben and I know every year after ISTE year, after a conference, we sort of reassess together what each of our own big three are. And I think that, you know, it's nice to have somebody to take that journey with and who can help you reframe your thinking and help you with resources and help you help push you on your way towards meeting your goals. So I think it's really important to actually share them with people who you work with closely.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. We've been very lucky. And I hope other folks are too. We'd love to hear from you.
I think my three goals are the first one that I still haven't figured out, as I mentioned before, is how to get kids to really collaborate with one another globally and go beyond communication and connecting. And this is, I'm talking about students 5th grade and under. I think the second thing is to really explore how technology really can fit in with pre-K 2nd graders so that they also can have as rich of experience as the rest of their school is having. And then the third one for me personally is to stop working and really joining in more of the conversation.
Also, great goals, and thanks so much for sharing them. One of the things I noticed when I first started doing this too, and thinking about some goal setting, was I think my goals shifted from thinking about tools. Oh, I want to use Wall Wisher. I want to use X that I learned about, and moving towards more. Having more depth and more about teaching and learning than about that. A couple things I wanted to say here before we open it up to anybody else that wants to share. But one I found incredibly helpful for me too when it came to goal setting, and Neil mentioned this too, saying them out loud, getting them down on paper, but then blogging about them too. And or writing about them in some way, journaling about them, something, so that that's another way of processing it too, and also sharing it with the audience, because I think, you know, there's people in here we want to learn from. We love learning from everybody that's here and the folks that aren't here. So definitely think about that too. And then I'd say that this year too, you know, when you have a list of goals, I've had probably a harder time this year meeting my goals, and now at the end of the year, I can really look at those three things and figure out, well, what kept me from meeting them as or achieving as much as I wanted to with that. Neil, did you have any more to add on goals there?
I don't really. I think that's just it's important to really always have goals in your life. I think that as teachers, a lot of times we get very sort of focused on whatever's right ahead of us and forget to look farther down the road and really or look outside our, you know, our peripheral vision and figure out where we want to go. I think it reminds me of, I'm sure Ben's hearing me talk about Daniel Pink's book, Drive. Talks about how, you know, when you have extrinsic motivations or motivators, you perform really well on the tasks that are right in front of you. There's no thinking involved, but you fail to see sort of the bigger picture. And I think by slowing down and setting goals, it helps you see the bigger picture and eventually be a better teacher. And having being a better teacher is more fun than struggling through the boring, you know, page 38 in your social studies book every week. Wrap it up first here, Ben.
I really like the way you put that too, is the idea of reflective teaching and the power of that. Such a great thing to think about. All right, well, we are almost out of time. I did want to give Vicki a chance to sort of put a bow on this. I have sort of some final things to say too, but I wanted to give her a chance to anybody else that wanted to, but I'm going to throw it to Vicki first.
You know, I've been looking back and thinking about what I was doing this time last year, and this time last year the final manuscript was due in about a week and a half, and now the book is out, and I guess my message to all of you is that you can be a teacher, and you can have dreams, and you can see those dreams come true, and you can be a teacher and do things you couldn't even imagine. I mean, the fact that I've taken kids to Qatar and India and China and have all these friends all around the world, this is a brand new day for teachers. You can be, you know, the track for teachers shouldn't be, oh, I'm going to be a teacher, and then I'm going to try to get famous and get out of the classroom so that I can travel and teach teachers. And, you know, that's a kind of perfectly wonderful people that are I respect a lot that do take that track. And I'm not going to demean that. But, you know, what would happen if we had thousands of teachers who were committed to be in the classroom and to teach other teachers at the same time? And Neil, to phone trips like that. Well, you know, we took the long way. We have a nonprofit and you raise money, but we sell Boston butts and we sell things and we, you know, we work very, very hard to fund trips like that for us. All of this requires hard work. But I guess the message I just want to give you is that when I look at that book and I'm working on my second book and you know, that book, I don't know if you can imagine just feeling like, you know, I would play Gone with the Wind and Chariots of Fire on Netflix on my iPad. And then I get frustrated at 11 o'clock at night. I go out to the driveway and cry. And then I would come back in and work till 5 or 6 in the morning. And it was just really, really hard. And Julie and I would go back and forth and we lost, you know, we thought we lost the book for a while, and it was just a big old mess. But if you work hard at something every single day, it happens. You don't have, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, but it happens. And it's hard, and believe it or not, we're still having some struggles with the book. The PD Toolkit is not out yet. The e-book, they're doing another version of the book. It's not out yet. And every once in a while I'll call Julie and say, you know, when is this hell going to be over? But then we say, you know what, if it helps people, that's all we've got in it. We still don't even know how many books we sold. And we probably won't until September when they give us some statement they give us to tell us how many we've sold. And I mean, I guess you can hear my voice. There's a lot of frustration that goes into it. But the goal is, can we help classrooms connect? Can we help teachers? Can we reach through our computers, reach through the book, and actually help teachers have what we have, which is students excited about learning and lives that are changed? You can do it. So, that's why we're here. We're here to be helpful. We're here to encourage other teachers. And I just hope that every one of you teachers that's in this room can decide, you know what, I'm not perfect, but I think I can reach out and be real, and I can help other teachers wherever I meet them and encourage them. And there's a lot of great things that can come from this. I was having a really bad week a couple of weeks ago, and my sister said, you know, you shouldn't stop writing. You should use this experience to help other teachers. And that's what I turned around and did. It became a very popular post. So I guess I'm just saying, use your experiences. You can have dreams and be a teacher. You can have more dreams than ever been possible because of the internet. And it's a great and wonderful day to be teaching. And we need to stand up and talk about how teaching is a noble profession and that we can encourage others and help others to pursue this noble profession. We do not believe what the news media says about us. We know who we are, and we're excellent, and we're incredible, and we can do things that people say that we can't. And I'm going to have to get off work before I start crying, because this is just what I'm completely passionate about. We can help our students, and we can also be students of each other and help each other. So it just means a lot, all of you that are here and all of you that have already bought the book. Thank you for making it worth it, because you're the reason that tears are worth it. If you're getting something out of this and challenging your thinking, then the struggle and the pain and the tears and my husband fixing food for us because I hadn't cooked today, that becomes worth it. So thank you, and I'm humbled and honored to be part of this great group and the Teachers Forward.
And Vicki, yes, and lots of applause for that, and thank you so much. And I think what's always drawn me to the work, and probably Neil too, that you and Julie do, is that the students are at the center of it, and it's what it's all about. And Barb Blackburn, who is actually hosting our Twitter chat for us tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern UrbanEd. Follow along, a little plug there, but she said something to me one of the last times we talked, and she said, every day you are one student's best hope, and that's something that you can't forget at all. And so that really struck a chord with me. And I think that's the sort of passion that's in this room. And those are the kind of teachers that share and connect and learn together. And so it makes it a big thing for me. So I wanted to share that. And also wanted to thank Vicki and Julia. I 5 years ago when I first started learning about EdTech, I came across some slideshows by somebody named Vicki Davis about wikis and how to use them. And then 5 years later, I had phone conversations with her, and she's asking me to help her do things. I'm just in awe of that and really appreciative, and I hope that, I think I speak for Neil on this too, but I hope we can make a fraction of a difference in the world of teaching and students that you have. Neil, I don't know if you want to give a speech to Neil, but that's mine, and thanks everybody. And take care and keep in touch for sure. We're out there, and hopefully we'll be meeting some of you soon. Take care.